Countryside Live 2018 is with us, and we felt it was only right to actually touch base with an intriguing stand, which is the Dog Lot, and we're delighted to speak now to
Helen.
Helen, just talk to us about the range of things you got here, because for the uninitiated, I'm looking at roast chicken muffins, toad in the hole, bacon piglets, liver sausage bites, salmon fish cakes, but they're not real.
Oh, they are real. They're dog treats, all homemade.
Oh!
By my fair hand.
So is this, I mean, in many ways, yes, for your average canine, presumably everything he could ever wish for, or she.
It certainly is. Events where the dogs are allowed in, unfortunately they aren't at the showground. But the dogs drag the owners over to me, so it's quite a nice way to meet
them. I can understand that. Of course, we're looking over the main ring for where the equine activity is taking place. This is day two. How's the event been for yourself so far?
It's been good. A little bit quieter footfall-wise in this hall, but no, it's a really nice event and we enjoy being here.
Talk us through why you set up the dog's lot in the first place, because clearly, I mean, it seems like a wonderful idea, and talk us through your history.
I've been running about 8 years. I love dogs, always had dogs, and wanted to be able to provide the bits and pieces that you can never find. That was the plan, and then we moved into the homemade treats as well.
Excellent. That's fantastic stuff. And as I say, we've also got Cassie's Kitchen as well here, lamb and mint bones. I mean, my mouth's watering, and I'm not even a canine from that point of view, so it's fantastic. Now, we think that you might be sort of becoming more of a specialist niche person in time to come, because the dog's lot might be coming into an end. Is that so?
It is. We've decided that with the likes of the big boys on the internet, we can't really compete on the online side. So we have decided to draw it to a close at the end of this year, so there will be big bargains to come.
I was going to say, clearly, this is a real chance to get your sort of final routines in here, because you'll be much missed, Helen. It's been a delight finally touching base with yourself. We wish you all very well. Any plans to go into any other sort of activities?
Nothing planned at the moment, but we'll see.
Well, clearly, as we wait the Royce family arriving and doing their little stuff in all sorts of ways, we're doing a little early promenade, and we're delighted to find the artisan chutneys, preserves and Wensleydale cheese with the fabulous
Rob from Blueberry Hill Preserves yet again.
Back in place here, and another wealth of material. I have to say, Rob, just sharing the location of the last batch that I actually took from your good self a few weeks back, went down extremely well with Nottingham's finest musician, David Fox, and indeed several other producers in Norwich also benefited from the chutney. So I mean, spreading the word.
Spreading the word far and wide for us, which we're grateful for. We knew they'd enjoy them. They're great products, and I'm really pleased to hear it. Thank you so much.
This is day two, of course, of the 16th Countryside Live. Your thoughts on how the process has been going?
It's always a really nice event for us. It's been going not a great length of time, and we always felt it was one that would grow and had potential over the years. It's a great family weekend out for people with kids, especially around the half-term period. Lots of activity, the weather forecast being good, and so we had a good day yesterday, and we're looking forward to another good one today, all being well.
I'm hopeful that the Royce family, Sue and Bridget and Dylan, will be coming along, so they'll be able to avail themselves of the taste test and various other bits and pieces. Are there any new strands that you're introducing, obviously, as we begin to head up into the festive period? Yes, I can't believe I said that, but I suppose as we head out of October, that's the next biggie.
Oh, we've been in the festive period, according to our customers, since about July, I think, to be honest with you. That's when we first start getting asked for our festive things. Yeah, we always bring a Christmas chutney out at in preparation for Christmas, 1st of October, which we launched at Beverley a couple of weeks ago, and that's always very popular. We've got some great cheese wheels that we always bring out, which are 8 different varieties of cheese in a nice big wheel, which is a great gift. We've got some little gift packs on the fruit curds that we've got out this year as well. And a special little Wensleydale sticky toffee cheese for Halloween as well, which is a new innovation from the Wensleydale Creamery, and it seems to be going down very well so far.
It is quite literally a win-win situation. And once again, the web address remains blueberryhillpreserves.co.uk.
It certainly does. You can get us on the web, and there's a web shop there where you can buy a product from. I'm not a big Twitter person, unfortunately. I'm a bit too old for that, but you can get us on Facebook.
Now, I'm conscious that actually we see you obviously manning the stall doing great stuff there, and usually, as say, when it gets a little bit busier, there are a whole range of folk actually coming along here. Do you ever get a chance to see any of the show itself? Or is it a case of, are you insane? I'm a professional.
I think you are insane, yeah. We don't get the chance to have a look very often at all, to be honest with you. The time we get is before it opens in the morning, and at the back end when it finishes, when there's nobody here. So we do like to have a wander around. Most of the traders know each other. We're on the same circuit week in, week out. And it's nice to see who's here and just have a quick catch up over a little morning coffee. But other than that, now we don't see anything at all.
Images, photographs, and a variety of other bits and pieces. The Living Portraits of Dog and Equine Portrait Specialists is where we are now. We're delighted to speak to you.
My name's Dave Morgan.
David, talk to us about some of these absolutely amazingly wonderful canine images we've actually got in front of us.
Well, that's very kind of you. And as you say, we have plenty of pictures of what we do extremely well, we think, which is specialising in dogs and equine portraits. We have plenty of different varieties here. We have canvases, we have prints, we have what we call is a triptych, which is three prints in a large frame, which is very, very popular.
And medieval as well, actually, going back to the original nation of a triptych.
Yes, exactly. Well, that's just about my age, I think. I feel quite medieval today.
So. I detect a slight Liverpool accent. Is there a Merseyside background there?
You've got a very good ear, yes. My wife and I were both born in Liverpool, but we've managed to escape, and we're over in Yorkshire nowadays.
I thought you'd be civilising from Lancashire to Yorkshire, or from Red Rose to White Rose.
Yeah.
In terms of the overall sort of process, I mean, you've been asked this many times, but how do you capture that wonderful look? The sparkle in the eyes that we see time and time again. Is it just a case of you use doggy treats or canine treat, or is it just a case of you pay them very well?
Well, I'd like to think we paid them, but we're poor and impoverished, so we don't do any of that. No, I think you've got to build up a sort of repertoire of skills, and we do that over the years that we've done this. And I should point out, it's actually my daughter that takes all these photographs. I can't claim credit for that. So you build that knowledge up, and you supplement it with a real lot of skills. So on top of that, you just build an empathy with the dog or the horse. And dogs are really good subjects, because they range from nice dogs that just sit there and say, please take my photographs, to the ones that run around like they're really, really enjoying themselves. And across that whole range, you can take these photographs if you just got patience, a little bit of knowledge, and the ability to build up that empathy, really.
And do you have a particular favourite out of the ones that we're looking at here? Is it the white Scottie dog? Is it the black Labrador? What are your own personal favourites? Or is that too difficult a question to ask?
Well, at this time of the morning, any question is difficult. But no, I don't have favourites, really, because each dog is different. But if I had one that I really, really like, there's a nice picture here of a collie dog that my daughter took in her studio. She spent a lot of time taking the picture and then building it up and enhancing it, and it's a spot-on picture, really. But now we just like taking dogs' pictures.
It's been a wonderful delight sharing some thoughts with yourself today. A name check for your wonderful partner here, who is too shy to actually go on microphone but still needs to have been mentioned in the credits.
This is Anne, my wife, who supports us both tremendously. She doesn't spend any money on me, but spends lots of pennies at these shows, but I couldn't do this without her. That's for sure.
Wonderful stuff to add. And can people reach you online? Is there a web address? People listening to this, where do they go?
It's www.livingportraits.co.uk.
The Donkey Sanctuary, drying tears since 1969, is on one of the towels we've got here. Lots of great stuff. Everything you might want to support if you're a donkey fan. I would delight now to speak to.
It's Laura.
Laura from the Donkey Sanctuary. You've got two wonderful donkeys here as well. Their names are?
Jack and DJ.
Jack and DJ. DJ, very apt, of course, obviously, for any radio people, as opposed to dinner jacket, but that's a different line. Does he spin the discs?
No, he doesn't.
Just a thought. So share with us, Countryside Live, how's it been for you so far?
It's been really good, yeah. Yeah, it's been a really good show. It always is. Come every year and support the donkeys, and we get lots of supporters coming to see the donkeys for cuddles and things like that.
Now, I mean, we've worked with South Sabre Crossy over the years with various donkey sanctuary things, including donkeys in the Holy Land, donkeys in Palestine. We forget at times just how important these animals actually are in terms of just human existence, really.
They are, especially abroad in Europe. They are their car, so they are extremely important abroad. But they're also important over here at the moment. We've started to do donkey facilitated learning for vulnerable adults and children, and connecting with the donkeys is very important to a lot of people. It brings out a lot of emotions.
So they're an important being.
Yeah, very much so. How did you get involved with the Donkey Sanctuary yourself?
I used to work for the RDA for about 20 years. And then because the sanctuary was nearer to my house for my children's work, that's why I went to work with them. And I've never left since, so, yeah.
Now, it's tantamount to the excellent work that you're actually doing, because this is one of those rare times we've had a chance to have a few words with your good self, because normally, and I know what's going to happen later on today, this area is completely packed with youngsters. I mean, there is something fantastic about donkeys, really, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. I don't know what it is. They attract people's attention. I think it's because they do look sad, even though they're not sad. They're lovable, fantastic creatures. But yeah, normally we're packed, but it's first thing, so that's why we're, you know.
And talk us through some of the amazing things you've got here, which people can actually have to obviously support the Donkey Sanctuary as well, because you've got calendars, you've got everything, right?
Yeah, we've got Christmas cards, every kind of Christmas card you want, or any sort of card. We've got calendars, we've got wrapping paper, we've got books, we've got everything that you can think of with donkeys. We've even got tractors and cuddly donkeys galore.
Well, there we are, and no sign of an Eeyore in sight, which is, I suppose, a line, really. In terms of people getting in touch with your good self, if they can't make it to the show, is there a web address that you've got?
Yeah, it's www.thedonkeysanctuary.org.uk.
And DJ was getting up behind me. Is it DJ who's behind me?
He was coming straight up behind you then, yeah.
We'll make sure that's all sorted through. It's been a delight sharing some thoughts with yourself. Wish you well. Is this the last one of the season whilst you're sort of out and about?
It is for us, yeah. Yes.
So next one presumably will be next year.
Well, unless you want to come to the sanctuary, and then we've got our Christmas fair on the 2nd of December, and we've also got our nativity on the 13th of December.
And the sanctuary is?
It's the Donkey Sanctuary Leeds, and that's at Eckup in Bramhope.
Always very impressive when we can actually have a few moments with the show director, Charles Mills. I say show director extraordinaire in many ways, Charles. And you've worked your magic again this year. You brought weather as well as great entertainment.
Well, I don't know whether it's magic or luck, but whatever, we're very grateful for a bit of nice sunshine, yes.
It is very good. I mean, Sue, your initial thoughts on the 16th, I can't, I mean, 16th. Countryside Live.
I think you're right, but I'm not totally sure. It goes quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when it was just the second, but still.
You couldn't have wished for a better day for it. It's absolutely fantastic. I mean, coming into the showground this morning, you can see it's a hive of activity. All the horses beautifully turned out, even at 9 o'clock this morning. They must have been up for hours before this. I'm just watching some of the classes going through now. Absolutely stunning. I'm sure there's loads to see on the showground today.
Charles, any particular favourites from yourself over the last couple of days? I mean, obviously, we've got the vet on day two. We had the shepherdess yesterday. Anything that you thought, that's my... Or is it the pop-up pub?
Well, no, I mean, all the things you mentioned were great, but the thing that's most impressive to me is that people looked happy and are enjoying it. That's when I know we're doing the job right.
And in terms of, obviously, looking through the whole process of the Yorkshire Agricultural Society, another successful year, really, from Nigel's point of view. You must be very proud.
Yeah, so we're delighted, but, you know, we're not complacent. We want to keep training to improve what we're doing and listen to what people want to see.
Of course. Sue?
Yes, there's going to be a lot coming up for the Yorkshire Agricultural Society next year, particularly with Brexit. How are you intending to help?
The B word, Charles.
I know, the B word. But it's a real big deal for agricultural people, particularly in Yorkshire. How are you going to try and help them through the, how shall we say, bump in the road?
Has Theresa May been in touch?
Well, look, I am a farmer, and I came determined this weekend not to mention that word.
I'm sorry. I mean, what can I say, Charles? You know, it's straight out there sometimes.
Well, it is a challenge. It is a concern, but farmers are very resilient people and very adaptable. Sadly, I'm old enough to remember difficult times in farming before, and we somehow found a way through. But it's not just about farming. We mustn't forget the rest of the country. You know, everybody has a problem too with it. It's something we've got. I hope it just gets sorted out sooner rather than later, more than anything.
I mean, certainly the kind of internationalism that the Great Yorkshire Show has promoted actively over the years can't be allowed to go to waste, because, I mean, it's just, you just, you know, the thought of Leaping Lorenzo not being able to actually sort of come across because of border difficulties, it's inconceivable.
Well, the countryside isn't just going to disappear. It might be managed in a slightly different way, and who knows, that might be better, but we need to know. I am a farmer, and I think the one thing that I've heard very little of is food security. And the other thing is that the countryside does look like it does because of the people that work on the land. And I'm sure the general public would not want to see that radically change.
I'd agree entirely. Being a farm child myself, yes, I know there have been times, particularly during the 80s, where it was a real tough time. I think things like this are really great for bringing people who maybe aren't into the countryside, bringing them in and finding, being able to see what's actually out there. We're just going to have a look at a lot of the exhibitors in the food hall.
She was a big fan of Mason's gin, Charles. Oh. It's the deal breaker always.
And the cheese, yeah.
No, there's no question about it. The society is very concerned regarding agriculture and people that work in the countryside. And I think more than anything, all the shows that we have here are a chance for people to come together and maybe moan or have a laugh more than anything. And I hope that's the latter is what they do. And meet old friends and just try and maybe in some ways, sadly, forget about it for a day or two.
Well, as you can see, Charles, we brought our regular junior reporter, Bridget, along for today's routine. What sort of things would you recommend Bridget checks out?
Well, we stood here in one of the halls with a part of the equestrian facility we have. That's a great thing to see, but there's something here for everybody. I mean, young and old alike. I think even there are things as an old man like me would like to see.
Chronologically gifted, Charles, or experientially enhanced. Let's not mention the O word and put it in the same category as the B word. Charles has been fantastic as ever. We'll doubtless speak again 2019 post the B word for the Great Yorkshire Show.
We'll look forward to it. Thank you.
It's wonderful how when Sue Rice and Dylan Rice and Bridget Rice approach a stand with me, instantly the storeholder reaches for a knife. It's all right. It's not. It's just the way Rob is. It's a way of greeting. Rob, we're back again with your good self. And again, intrigued to actually sort of promote the notion of the Yorkshire Wensleydale sticky toffee Halloween special here. But Sue, I thought you'd be appreciative of that.
In the shape of a pumpkin. That's cool. That is wonderful.
In fact, it's fair enough if Rob's got a few seconds to actually sort of deal with the whole sort of bits and pieces for you to actually throw those key questions to. I mean, look at him, multitasking. Men aren't supposed to be able to do this, but he's actually sort of getting his tasting packages out there just in time for Bridget to have the sort of first taste of the morning. And I'll continue with doing the sticky toffee with Wensleydale.
Wow, Halloween that special. Is fantastic. You know, I must say, when I was just processing that just now, I thought, sticky toffee, cheese, I don't really know about that, but you know what? That is fantastic. Who had that great idea then?
It wasn't me. Actually, I'm not a big fan of having my cheese messed about with. So if ever with this instance of cranberries in and things like that, I tend to avoid it. But actually, that is really nice.
One thumb up, two thumbs up?
Two thumbs up, actually. Yeah, well, I think that's a...
Six some thumbs up, really.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. So who thinks, because you've got, I'm just sitting here looking at this marvellous array of jams and chutneys, who thinks of your product ideas?
This is true. Most of the product ideas that we have come from customers. So what we do is we tend to analyse, as everyone does at the end of the year, because our big time is Christmas, coming up to Christmas. So in January we have a little bit of downtime, so what we do is we look at all the stats from the sales throughout the course of the year and all the products that we do on across the whole range, and we tend to try and change two or three every year to keep it fresh for people. And during the course of the year we get loads of ideas from customers. Have you got this? Have you got that? So things that we get asked for all the time, and there's quite a few that come up regularly. And then they also come up with some innovative ideas, and see, we write them all down, and come the end of the year we have this huge list of about 30 or 40 different potential flavours, and we start playing and messing around with them, adding our own ideas, and most of them don't work. But you just get the odd one or two that you think that would be a really great addition, a little bit unusual, could we try and be a bit different? And then we put it in the range and fingers crossed, see how it goes.
Like that crazy mad book of ideas that you sit down and look at the end of the year. So which one is your best seller?
Our best selling chutney, and our predominant business, is the hot garlic pickle, which has been a staple diet for many people for probably thick end of 10 years now. So it's quite unusual because it's chopped garlic, a little bit of chilli, and it's quite sweet. So when you cook garlic, it's quite a sweet product, but it's got a nice little hit afterwards of the chilli, so it's a garlic. And you can use it not just as an accompaniment to cheese and meats and pork pies and what have you, but you can also add it to curries, spag bol, chilli con carne, that sort of thing, just to give it a little bit of a bite as well. So it's a multifaceted product, basically.
It's hot on the tongue, I will say that.
And the great news, as we've said, is that blueberry hill preserves will be at Lincoln in December 1st, December 2nd, for the Christmas food and gift fair at Lincolnshire Showground.
Oh, that's marvellous. You're in our manor. Fabulous.
We will be down there. It's one of our favourite events of the year. They always look after us really well. We've got a really good customer base built up there, so we're looking forward to that one. The preview evening on the Friday, and then the Saturday and Sunday for the full weekend show.
There are certain things without which the Harrogate Showground is just not complete, and Davilles of Ripon, established 1983, is one of those, especially when we've got the awesome Shirley Davil with us. How are you, Shirley?
I'm very well, thank you. Good morning.
I'm always impressed with the range of things you got here, from the Ripon Rascallion, which is, in many ways, it's the challenge to actually have a whole Ripon Rascallion, really, through the chocolate brownies, the Dayton Wall. Do you have a favourite yourself?
I have lots of favourites. I have to control myself.
Of course.
I do like the Ripon Rascallions. I like the Danish. Ginger pigs at this time of year, very nice.
Sue?
I was just looking at the Ripon Rascallions because I have never heard of a Ripon Rascallion.
Born in Skegness, you see. It's a whole new world.
Well, yeah. they're an old recipe hard to say, but they used to be called Ripon. They used to be called Fat Rascals, that sort. Have you heard of Fat Rascals?
No, I haven't. And I was just wondering, one, what's in them? Two, is it anything particular to Yorkshire?
It is quite an old Yorkshire recipe. They're similar to a scone, more enriched, more fruity, bordering on a rock bun, between a scone and a rock bun, I would say.
And they do look absolutely marvellous. I mean, as Alex probably realises, I'm a cakey addict. Wow. And I'm just looking
at the cake, it's the gin, it's just a whole range of things.
An amazing array of cakes. But the things particularly caught my eye, other than the Ripon Rascallions, was the diabetic apricot and sultana cake and the fatless fruit crepe. Now, I know there is this move towards, dare I say, healthier eating. Are you finding that those are things that are more popular in your repertoire now, or are you finding that people are still going after the old favourites?
The old favourites are definitely still up there, but the fatless fruitcake is quite popular with people who are trying to lose a little bit of weight. The sugar-free one is very popular with diabetic people.
Shirley, what would you recommend for this hard-working team of Royce? She's got Bridget behind me there, Dylan and Sue. They've come up all the way from Lincolnshire to this event. What should they actually have to sustain them for their subsequent audio interviews?
Well, the latest one, it's actually been a couple of years now, but the rhubarb and ginger cake is very popular. And it's worth a try, I think, if you like rhubarb.
We do, yes.
Well, then I think I'm going to have to make a donation to actually go for the rhubarb and ginger cake from that point of view. Shirley, will you be around for subsequent events in the next few months? Anything you'd like to promote?
We're doing quite a few Christmas events. We're doing the Harrogate Christmas Festival and the Ripon Cathedral in November.
One of these days we're going to have to do some of those events and actually see them, because presumably you'll be outside as well then. Will you be outdoors?
The Harrogate is outdoors, and the Ripon one is actually in the cathedral.
And is there a web address that you actually access as well?
No.
Now you see, this is the key thing. Davilles of Ripon, established in 1983. You can only get them at the show itself.
This is where you have to do a homage. You have to, do a pilgrimage to the place.
She's only right. Shirley, it's been a delight as ever. See you again very soon.
Thank you very much. Nice to see you.
Shirley, we've actually got a taste test coming up here, so are you ready to actually hear what Bridget thinks about these sausage rolls?
Yes, go for it.
Okay, Bridget, what's your final view on the sausage roll?
The best sausage roll I've ever tasted.
Can't buy publicity from that point, can you, really?
No, that's brilliant. Thank you very much.
Now, it's fair to say that when it comes to gin, one of the regular companies that we've been featuring over the last few years has been the company that begins with an M. We won't go any further, but we will say we've actually turned that M upside down to have Whittaker's gin, so it's become a W, and we're delighted now to speak to
Jane Whittaker.
The awesome Jane Whittaker, which is fantastic. Jane, would you like to just share with us what made you come up with the idea of Whittaker's gin?
Well, my husband and I set this business up 3 years ago, producing London dry gins on our little shed on our little farm in Dacre Banks, just outside Harrogate.
This is fantastic news, so another local routine. Now, Sue, it's fair to say you are a connoisseur when it comes to the G word, isn't it?
It is, yes. I do like my gin, I think it's fair to say. Yes.
I sense here Whittaker's could be another wonderful entry into the pantheon of rice-tested and approved gin scenarios.
Absolutely. I am not a slave to one sort of gin or another. I like them all in their various different guises. And I note that you have a smorgasbord in front of us. Talk us through what there is.
We've got our original gin, which is has actually just won Best International Gin in America.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
America's a big country, so to actually win it in America, it's impressive indeed.
Reflects the countryside in North Yorkshire. You've got some bilberries, hawthorn berries, bog myrtle and garden thyme. Then we've got our contemporary Pink Particular, which is quite a hot and spicy gin. Very controversial London Dry Slow Gin, which is a bit of a divided audience. Then we've got our beautiful Navy Strength, our fabulous new Slow with Honey Gin. It's a traditional slow gin that's we use local honey that's been harvested within 2 miles of the distillery. And we're just about to release our Winter Solstice Gin, which is...
Dylan, clearly from the point of view of Winter Solstice, as a druid, you must be up for this.
I am, unfortunately. It's not here, is it?
No, it's not quite here.
But that's not... I'm interested, actually, because, I have to try some. I'm not that bothered about gins that have got additives in them, myself.
None of these
No, I don't mean, like, artificial. I mean, things like the pink gin and the gin, if like, slow gin. I'm not that... But you've mentioned the original... And then they've got the Navy Strength, but I have to try the one that was controversial. You see, I'm interested in why it was controversial.
it's just a very much an acquired taste. It starts its life off as traditional slow gin. We soak the slow berries in our original gin for about 6 months. Then my husband has the job of decanting it all back into a still. We put licorice root in with it, leave it for 24 hours, and then redistill it. So it's a completely different... I think people are expecting it to be the syrupy, sweet, but it's not nothing like that at all. And it's the flavours come in layers rather than it's straight in your face.
Yeah, I mean, slow gin is nice from my point of view when it's diluted with more gin. So it's got a so it's got to just because otherwise it is very thick. Can I just try a little bit of that?
Here comes the crucial moment. So Dylan actually tasting the potentially as Jane said the controversial in here. Certainly a gentle sort of sniff to start off with. Mm-hmm. So it's gonna be good.
There's something in there, isn't there? It's not sloes and it's not gin. It's all going on. Wow. That is really nice. It's what did you say that was? What was the flavour?
Licorice.
That's it. That is really interesting, and it kind of like hot on the tongue, isn't it? That's really nice. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't want to drink it as a normal gin drink, but I can see that had been a good addition.
So you obviously feel you don't want to be left out here.
Well, I didn't want to be rude, but yes, please. I'll try the clean is low. Unlike Dylan, I think there looks to be a big move, particularly on the high street, towards gins that are tweaked, shall we say. So rhubarb gin, quince gin, and they're quite nice, but I always like to think of particularly things of this nature as being as local as you can possibly make them, because I think using the water, I've no doubt you
we
use the water.
Our own water on our farm. We use local, our stills were made in Yorkshire by Tadweld and Tadcaster. So we're actually currently the only distillery in the UK that's using handmade Yorkshire stills. So it's quite a big thing for us. We're actually going into whiskey production in the spring.
Wow.
Yeah, we're just building our second still house at the farm.
Well, I think that's obviously a location report is called for then, clearly.
Oh, definitely, without a doubt. And so we'll be open to the public next year. So
I see a gin tour of Yorkshire going on here. Sounds good to me.
You know, Alex, you rarely come up with good ideas. I could see going on location, looking at the process, because I'm really interested in the setting up of the business, really, because there's all the regulations and things. It must be...
It took a long time to get all our licensing. Yeah, I mean, the HMRC are our god. So it's... you have to jump through a lot of hoops to get the licensing. It's not easy. They've been actually very supportive more than anything. It's
a success. We were going to expect no more. And is it a success from your own point of view, Sue?
Absolutely. And you bring glasses too. just saying.
Well, thanks very much. Thanks for coming to see us.
A genuine pleasure. Is there a web address that you have that you'd like to share with the listeners as well?
Yeah, it's www.whittakersgin.com.
Sue, I'm going to hand over now to your good self, even though you have been imbibing the gin, because I'm sure you'll be able to cope, because Bridget is about to actually have her first activity with Yorkshire Stone Ground wholemeal flour. So over to you.
Thank you very much. Yeah, we're at the Queen's Mill Castleford stand, and Bridget's picked up that there's two bowls of, well, you describe it, Bridget. What can we see?
Well, on the right side, there is some flour. And then on the left side, there's some grain.
Okay, and we've got a lovely cap of wheat here and a Yorkshire Stone Ground wholemeal flour bag. So what do you think, Bridget, perhaps this is trying to tell us about the wheat?
Yeah, about how the flour's made. Mm-hmm.
So can you talk everybody through how you think that wheat is ground and makes its way into flour to make bread?
Well, so, because we've got a sort of next door neighbour that has a cornfield, I get to see where he plants it, first of all, then he goes for watering it, and then maybe like a whole month later, the wheat will have grown, and he'll go and use a combine harvester to harvest it. And it goes in this sort of like machine thing at the back, and all the corn goes in the machine at the back.
And this is what we've got here, isn't it, Bridget? This is the lovely ears of wheat that we've got that have come out from the plant.
And then it gets ground up with sort of like a... I mean, if you're doing a small amount, then you can use one of those sort of things in a bowl.
The word you're looking for, Bridget, is a stone mill. And unfortunately, they haven't brought a stone mill today.
Stones. I think you're meaning the pestle and mortar with the action you were doing.
Yeah, but we've got a lovely example of how a stone mill actually works. One going one way and one going the other way.
So Queen's Mill has 12.
12
stones. It's the largest in the world.
Wow, that's fantastic. And what comes out at the other end, Bridget?
Flour comes out at the other end. And then all the flour sort of like, I'm guessing it goes down the chute into like a bowl or something, and then it gets bagged up.
Yeah. So you were saying earlier, I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name.
I'm Jeanette.
Oh, Jeanette. You were saying to us earlier that a lot of children don't actually associate, they can't understand how it gets from the plant to the flower. Is that right?
Absolutely. One of the colleagues was at Farmacopolis in the summer, and they were actually next to a field of growing corn, and asked the children how they thought it got into the flower, and they didn't know. They didn't know what the combine was doing and what it was cutting.
I mean, that's vitally important for children to know where their food comes from. What sort of things do you do at Queen's Mill in Castleford to try and disseminate that information? Have you got displays and actual practical things that they can do there?
We will in the future. We have mill tours that families can go around and they actually see it being ground. They see the stones and they tell the story, and eventually they see the mill wheel as well outside.
And do you have a lot of visitors to Queen's Mill?
We do. We're open on Thursday, and you can come by arrangement, or we have open days. So the last was Heritage.
Marvellous. So any further information, I'm sure that there'll be lots of listeners out there that will want to come and have a look. www.castlefordheritagetrust.org.uk. Thank you very much for speaking to us today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yorkshire to the core, I believe, is the image that we actually... Is it Yorkshire to the core?
Yes.
There we are, you see, I identify that. So, Dylan, what have you been finding out here from this fine gentleman?
Yeah, well, I've been finding out about, I was going to say dehumidifiers, but dehydrators. It's one of those things where you put fruit in, fresh fruit, dry it out, and then you can preserve it in that way. It's a fascinating machine. I think I might actually go and get one.
There we are, you see, a winner. And what are your thoughts on countryside life, sir?
It's very good. I love it, getting people here and just being able to talk things about apples and everything else, really.
Indeed, well, it is the season of apples and apple bobbing and dipping and so on. And the usual range that we have here from Blenheim oranges through to Captain Kidd's, Royal Galas, and indeed Rubinets. Just some of the selection you've got today.
That's correct. Got apples dating back to 1597. So we've got Leathercoat, Russet, up to some modern varieties. So a whole host of different ones. Mm.
Yeah, we've got extensive orchard, probably about 20, 30 different varieties, okay. I suppose. One of the big problems we've had is we planted them all, and the labels have gone. If we brought you an apple, could you identify that apple, do you think?
Right, so we need three, because it's actually quite surprising that when you say, oh, they're all the same, the reality is when you put them side by side and start looking at them, there are variations in them. Yes, we can go through them and try and identify them. It doesn't always work, but, you know, most of the time you can go through them and have a fair stab at it and get close to them.
Yeah.
So. Do you have a Norfolk Royal?
I haven't. I've got a Norfolk Royal Russet.
Yep.
So that's somewhere. Must be here. So
it was here. It must be around here.
Somebody's Norfolk Royal Russet. No, well, we can have a look in a minute. No, because I can remember an apple from when I was a child, and you shook it, and the pips rattled. Does that sound like a Norfolk Royal?
That was the argument for Cox's Orange Pippin. Is that was their statement? Is obviously pips rattled in the Cox's Orange Pippin.
And do they? All right, hold on, I'm going to pick... No, that's a Queen Cox.
I haven't got an Orange Pippin.
No, that definitely doesn't rattle, no. Yeah, because it's a fascinating thing. This was a light-coloured apple. Beautiful taste. They eat her. Never managed to track it down, and it certainly wanted a Cox's Orange Pippin.
No, Norfolk Royal, I say, I've got the Russet, but the I haven't got the regular Norfolk Royal.
Mm. We'll have to see if we can find one.
It's a mystery which I'm sure we'll solve in future years. For the moment, many thanks indeed.
All right, you're welcome.
One of the wonderful things about the Countryside Live event, of course, is you get some fantastic demonstrations at the Great Yorkshire Food Theatre, and we were privileged to actually sit in the audience, as we've just seen, an awesome demonstration of a three-course dinner party with, of course, the fabulous...
Julie Robinson from Malton Cookery School.
And Debbie was with you as well.
Debbie Raw was with me. She's my assistant, yes.
Sue, questions for Julie?
Well, I was watching how amazing you were under stress and pressure of cooking to an audience. When you've got a dinner party and perhaps you're not the best of cooks, you're a little bit nervous when you're cooking for more than two or three people, what would you say the best strategy would be in order to deal with that?
There's a few tips. The first one is keep it simple. Don't overstretch yourself. The second thing is don't try and plate everything up like we did so it looks like a restaurant. Put a big sharing board on the table, and then in effect you're only plating up one plate of food. And the other thing is never tell the guests what the menu is, because if it goes wrong in the kitchen, you can just change it into something else.
See, you didn't have that privilege when you were a contestant with Come Dine With Me, Julie. Sue and her family over there were indeed on Come Dine With Me. And I don't think you were allowed to do that, were you?
No, with Couples Come Dine With Me, you have to give the menu about 3 or 4 weeks before filming, so you don't get the pleasure of having to change it, and you have to do it under the guise of cameras and on a time scale that actually most people don't appreciate when you watch it on the telly. And I imagine it's the same when you've got students in your cookery school. There's a time limit on these things and you have to push everything through. It is rather difficult. What's your favourite meal to cook?
Well I think I must have been a butcher in a previous life, because anything that I can butcher and cook meat, so I was struggling slightly with an oven we hadn't got very hot back there, but anything to do with the meat. And what I love to do is get as much done ahead as possible, so whatever I choose as my dinner party, get all the prep done, work really hard the day before or the night before, and then try and enjoy your guests. Otherwise there's no point having them round. And may I just say that if you did Come Dine With Me, then you must be one crazy lady.
I've said that for some time, actually, Julie.
Yes. Anybody who puts themselves under that pressure is welcome to come and work at the cookery school any time, because it'll be relaxing for you.
Yeah, I would actually wholeheartedly agree with what you just said, because I cook for 14 on Christmas Day or Boxing Day. Sometimes we alternate. But for 14, when you've got that many people in all at once, the key to everything is prep as much as you possibly can beforehand, and don't do anything crazy like souffles.
Nobody wants a souffle at Christmas. Get yourself over to the cookery school. We do the courses where you take away the whole Christmas lunch, including the desserts, for 6 people. And it's all done in the freezer first week of December.
And the best way to get to the cookery school online, presumably, would be?
Online, it's Malton Cookery School. You can book online there. Otherwise, we're in partnership with the Talbot Hotel in Malton. So if you ring them, the girls there will tell you anything you need to know.
Julie, it's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with you yourself today. We'll take a few photographs for the website and various other bits and pieces. Is this it then? Can you relax for the rest of the day, or is it going to run you later?
I think Sue Nelson's expecting a little bit of washing up help backstage, just to support, because we all work together. But otherwise, yeah, I'm dying to have a look round.
Now, you may be intrigued, dear listener, in the fact that Dylan and myself are currently watching some dumpers being driven around the outside ring here, whilst a birds of prey display is taking place to our right, and a sheep show is literally directly in front of us, together with diggers to our left as well. But even more exciting, Dylan, is the fact that in a few moments' time, proving that we've got total faith in women drivers, Bridget and Sue will be attempting to actually move behind the wheels of a dumper, and they're probably just about ready to go on now.
Yeah, I'm not even sure if Sue's actually going to get on. I think it might.
Really?
It might just be Bridget.
Just Bridget.
Bridget, 10 years old. And it's one of these things where children can have a go at these little dumper trucks and drive them around an obstacle course. They only do about, maybe, well, I think 1 mile an hour might be pressing it.
Bridget's getting into the truck now, and you're absolutely right. It's Bridget by herself. Yeah. Sue is taking photographs.
She has done the sit-on-and-ride lawnmower before. And
bigger than a lawnmower,
yeah, it is a bit bigger than a lawnmower. But then again, it hasn't got the high-speed twirling blades. She should be all right. She knows which way to turn the steering wheel, and there are barriers between her and us, so it'll be okay. I have every faith in my daughter. She's got a smile on her face, and she looks like she's enjoying herself.
Well, the excitement continues ever onwards here. It's not a race, obviously, but I'm going to hand over the microphone to yourself, Dylan, and you can commentate on your daughter's travels here. She's taking the long road around here, it seems.
She is, yes. It's not like commentating on a Formula One or anything like that. I don't think they're going to be speeding past.
It's a more refined Formula One. I'm going to
more of a ballet, really, yeah. So she's actually negotiated the first corner successfully. None of the barriers have been knocked down. She's actually looking in the right direction. No, she was looking in the right direction. She seems to be too interested at the moment in the birds of prey.
I'll give you the microphone to hold on to.
All right,
so
okay.
I'll take some photographs.
That's great, yeah. Yeah, so she's got a really smile on her face. I'll just give her a little bit of a wave. I shouldn't have done that. She should have kept her hands on the steering wheel. So I'll avoid waving at her again. She's looking at the pigeons. she's looking at everything but the way she's going. Turn. Oh, she's found that thing that they have on top of the steering wheel, whatever that's called, that twizzles round. Look this way, Bridget. Look at where you're going. Yeah, now she's looking at me. It's not a high speed manoeuvre. She's gone round the S bends and the chicane. Straightens up. She can only just reach the pedals, I think. It was saying you had to be 1.4 metres tall. I guess that's so she can reach the pedals, and she can only just reach the pedals. She's got complacent now.
I've got to turn around. This is probably the best time I've ever actually had, and I'm sort of more nervous with the way Bridget's actually coping with this. This is phenomenal. You must be very proud. I mean, Sue's actually joining us now. Sue, this is driving. Presumably she'll be driving you home then, presumably.
I think it might take her a little while to grow her legs to actually fit onto the accelerator pedal. But I think her initial reaction was, "Mummy, I can't do this." But you know what? She's taken to it like a duck to water.
Do you think then we could actually now? I think she's just about old enough to do the sit on and ride lawnmower.
Well, I think she probably could, yeah.
I am nervous about the spinning blades. That's the only thing.
I'll give you the thing to take over because I've got too much of a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I'd like to get her to take more of an interest in mowing the lawn, to be honest.
Well, I'm sure you would, but she doesn't look too sure.
Yeah, but she's managed it.
Yeah. I mean, there are lots of other little boys and girls who are all looking equally as with equal trepidation. They can't decide whether they really want to do it or whether they really don't want to do it.
She looks very proud of herself there, doesn't she?
Yes, she does.
Of course, she's coming up to the queue at the end now, where everybody's and this is the next difficult point. It's all right going round the bends and stuff. She's actually now got to figure out how to stop the flaming thing.
No, she's revving. Get out of my way. Get out of my way.
As I said, probably the best experience I've had for quite some time. So thank you, Sue, Bridget, and indeed Dylan, for genetically putting this dream journey together. And the dumpers have been truly driven to sensible sort of lines. Well done. Well done indeed.
you.
Bridget, congratulations, well done. How did you find it?
It was a bit bumpy, and it felt like I got pins and needles all over myself. But it was really good. It was like you had to sort of turn it like a load of times to get it to even turn a little bit to where you wanted to get. But seeing that I have not learnt to drive, I don't know how to drive, that was quite good.
There we are. And I think the bottle of champagne will be actually be pulled over us in all sorts of ways, really. Fans obviously begin to work through as well. So great stuff.
Yes. I can't wait till she's 17 and starts to drive.
About 12 months ago, Dylan, I was delighted to find that Ginger was responsible for a YouTube video which was quite frankly awesome, insofar as it was demonstrating how to rescue a sheep when in central London they actually decide to wander through Waitrose. Isn't that right, Ginger?
I did, yeah. That was. Thanks for bringing that memory back. I'd only just forgotten it. Sleepless nights. Yeah, no, only sheep to go into Waitrose with four legs on Easter Saturday and come out in the same... In the same vein.
It was tremendous. And as I said, Ginger, you should hats off to you in more ways than one from that point of view.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
And here you are, Countryside Live. I don't think we've seen you at Countryside before. We've seen you in Lincoln, of course, a couple of times, for the smaller show.
We've been doing Countryside Live now for a good few years. We missed last year. They had something else here just for...
It wasn't the same, Ginger.
Mr. Knowles, no, he's a lovely man. He brought his milking machines and that kind of stuff up.
But robotic milking.
And yes, on. You know Mr. Knowles, lovely old boy. But yeah, they've asked us back this year, so that's nice.
It's excellent stuff. As we said, the usual classics are there. Susie, Belinda, Martha, Terry, Nobby. And I see Sam is currently being occupied the position by human
Sam.
Being.
Yes, yeah, that's the new Sam that we've got. That's dance is better, this one.
There you go. Dylan, thoughts of yourself?
Yeah, I'm just thinking, all the different sorts of sheep that you've got up here. You shear them.
I only shear one show.
You only shear one show, but you presumably sheared, you know, all of the different types.
Yeah.
Are some easier to shear than others?
Definitely. Big round sheeps are easier to shear than little skinny sheeps. Yeah, but around a carcass, you've got less wrinkles, you've got less angles, everything's flatter, less likelihood of cutting it, and just easier.
Ginger, this is particularly important because, I mean, as he kind of was putting in a couple of digs with me earlier, I'm going to say Dylan was once tempted to actually shear a sheep, I believe, by all accounts, according to Sue, with some scissors?
Share
the pain, Dylan, share the pain.
Explain this. Father-in-law's a sheep farmer,
right.
And we all get his kind of rejects. I've sort of tried, and I've been on a course for shearing sheep. Absolutely rubbish at it.
That's where I learned.
Sheep was traumatised. I was traumatised. So now we just have to go with scissors, really.
As in scissors or blades?
Oh, blades. Yeah.
I just had to be going out there with nail scissors then. I'm sorry.
No. But it's
not far off it.
Yeah. But how long? For me, I think it takes probably best part of maybe 3 hours to shear a sheep.
Right.
Yeah. What's your time at the moment?
I want to be doing about 40, 45 in that time, if I could. Yeah. I want to be shearing, not that I go do a lot of big gun shearing. Most of my flocks are smaller, more money in smaller flocks because they're more pet-like. Farmers are farmers. People like us, small holders. Not that we don't like our sheep anymore, but we spend more money on them, quite simple. So I generally do that. Quickest, I think the record for shearing a sheep is something like 38 seconds, something silly
three,
like that.
3 to 4 hours.
See, I'm always amazed by this with a professional shearer. When I shear a sheep, it's like a wrestling match. I'm struggling, sheep struggling.
He needs help, Ginger. He needs help.
Yeah. So do I.
You just have it there. It never moves.
Comfort. That has happened once or twice. Don't know. Yeah, that's a different story. Anyway, keep it off its backbone. Simple as that. If you keep a sheep off its tailbone, it's not uncomfortable. Keep it on its rumps. We've all been built with big cushions. Sheep are no different. So keep it on the cushion and not on the bone. Because obviously with a sheep, the backbone, just like us, is very close to the surface. So when you're rolling, say, 40, 50, anything up to 100 kilo sheep on that backbone, it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt any animal. So you only really should be flipping across the backbone just once. And that's a quick movement. As you're just about to come down at the last leg, she literally comes off one buttock on the other buttock and you finish it off.
So keep the sheep on the buttock.
keep the sheep on the buttock, unless you're going in the long blows where you're going up the sheep. You're going to come watch the show?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I'll aim that a bit at you. We'll turn that into a lesson.
Can we have a volunteer from the audience? No way.
No, if you have a look at the way I talk about that bit about the comfort, so you'll see that in the beginning of the show, yeah.
It's fair to say, Ginger, I thought my day had been made by Bridget driving the dumper.
You've been driving the diggers and stuff, have you? Oh, wonderful. I wanted to go, but I'm too big, they tell me.
But now that Sue, who actually, I think, Sue, you shared this tale with me about 3 or 4 years ago, and since then I've waited for, you know, to try and get these two things. It's going to be even better.
So this one's been in the bank then, has it? Right, I see.
Honestly, I stand at the pen and just shake my head because, you know, I grew up on a sheep farm and my job as a little one was to roll the fleeces. Mm. So I have seen this done firsthand. And
best job on shearing day is wool rolling.
Yeah, and I often think, blimey, you know, we couldn't have
Who
got
have I married?
A pair of scissors.
But your dad can't handle it anymore, can he? He's in his 60s and he can't shear anymore.
The problem with these old shearers, and I've got the same down my way, John O'Dell, absolute legend in Norfolk. And last year, oh boy, that Jacob put me on my ass. I said, well, you ain't getting any older, and he's getting bigger, mate. He said, I'm going to get the boy to do it next year. He's 74.
It's so physically intensive. Yeah. I mean, I know the boys, the shearers out in Australia and New Zealand, they have a certain shelf life, and then that's kind of it.
World record holder lives in the UK. Both of them. Matt Smith, he is a Kiwi, but Matt Smith, 731 ewes in 9 hours. Worked out about one sheep every 40-45 seconds. Matt was clipping that. And Ivan Scott, 856 lamb in 9 hours. An Irish shearer. And that's the world record. And 338 with blades. There you are.
Yeah. I've got a bit to go.
Not 338 hours.
It's a challenge, which I'm sure we'll see manifest. Alrighty, cool. Or check out the Sheep Show online, thesheepshow.co.uk. Ginger, we knew it was going to be different. We'll be back for the event itself.
Thank you very much. Yeah, look forward to seeing you.
Well, we're almost at the end of our particular coverage here of the 2018 Countryside Live Show at the Yorkshire Harrogate Showground. Dylan, do you now feel as though you're capable of actually going into sheep shearing as a possible industry?
Well, I'll tell you what, being able to shear a sheep and perform in front of an audience, I've never seen anything quite like it. I mean, I know the sheep, it struggled a bit and it played up, but he kept his commentary going, and that, I don't know, the personification of a farmyard animal, absolutely unbelievable.
Sue, favourite bit of the day?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, the three little sheep at their bottom end, the Susie the Southdown, the Belinda the Barefaced Ewe, Martha in the Cuff, Terry the Texel, the three or four of them doing moves all at once.
And Bridget, your own favourite time today?
Yeah.
Good. Any other favourites you've had today?
Food.
The diggers, me getting to ride the diggers, that was good.
Well, there you are. You've listened to the Rice family, Sue, Bridget and Dylan, and Alex left you on location in association with Southside Broadcasting for the Midweek Drive and more on Siren Radio. Can we all say farewell?
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye.